Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about Plenish soybeans. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at the Arctic Doomsday Seed Vault. A History Minute, we'll also talk about high oleic beans in general. In our Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events. We'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. What a interesting year we're having. Temperatures can't seem to decide where they want to go, and it's just been very, very different. We had really cold, no snow, and then we had snow, kind of cold.
Decently cold.
And now we're spring. It's springtime.
What is this, like fall spring or?
Yeah, this fool spring.
Fool spring?
I think this first is in the 11 seasons of Wisconsin. I do agree.
First fool spring.
We're still in fool spring, so we still have to have second winter yet.
Yep.
But we could be in spring of deception right now, then hit third winter, then mud season. So we
definitely have mud.
It's kind of muddy right now.
But it isn't as muddy as I thought it would be for like.
Even like
the snow
yards.
Melted, right? Usually, yeah. Farmers, you're like, but I think that, like, obviously, the frost is still in the ground right. Quite a bit. Like, one, it's when you start losing that frost, that's when all.
I know, I've been in some pretty flooded farmyards.
I mean, they're not, I would agree with you, they're not perfect. But
once the water does recede, I think it's going to be fairly muddy underneath.
I was surprised how fast, 12 inches or whatever we had, like how fast in just 2 days. Like
it was gone. We went from like snowmobile trails open, now granted they weren't real great in spots, to like all the snow gone.
But in talking with guys, Saturday was good yet.
They were okay, right. I'm just saying.
Sunday was questionable. Yes. Saturday, and then they closed them for like 7 a.m. Monday morning.
Well, they closed half of them on Sunday.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, half the county got closed.
Like half the county was closed, and it was kind of a weird, like, it was northeast was open, southeast was open, and then there might have been like a chunk of west, but like pretty much the whole west side they closed on Sunday morning, and then everything else was Monday morning. Yeah, we were having the snowmobile discussion yesterday, and I think it was Dan. I was talking to Dan Smith, and he said he was talking to somebody down in Columbus, didn't say who, that they can remember when they had like over, you know, like 2 months, like 8 weeks of snowmobiling in Columbus, Wisconsin.
The trails open.
Yeah.
8 weeks?
I can't remember the last time we've had more than 2 weeks of snowmobile trails open.
We did have that freak. It was like a month, the one where it just kind of worked
there
out.
There was one, yeah, it, like, maybe once.
Recently,
in the last, yeah.
But yeah, in general, lately it feels like if you get a week of them open, you're
lucky.
You're pretty pumped. Like, right. That's a good, but, like a good run. But
had the temperatures stayed cold enough to keep it frozen and a little bit of snow here and there, these probably would the trails would have been really good for a while.
We would have needed, that was real fluffy.
Yeah, tough to say. I don't know if they would have been because it. Because just how fast it melted, too, there was really no density to it. It was just kind of, like, gone.
Yeah. This is straight from the trail guru, Uncle Carl, who I think put a ton of hours on the...
I think he...
On the groomer and...
He took all of his field work hours he used to do as a younger fella and
put him in that
put
groomer.
Put him in the groomer now.
And made those trails really good. Like, you needed somebody who was really good at that to make them good, because... There wasn't a lot to work with in the snow world.
I mean, you could even tell when you'd come up to where they were coming onto the road. It didn't take long, and it was very dirty.
Right.
Where they were coming up, because even the ditches, just really wasn't a lot. But hey, at least you can say you got to do some this year, and that's probably about the best you can hope for, it seems like.
Right.
Last year there was nothing.
Yeah, even northern Wisconsin didn't. That's when it really hurts. And even northern Wisconsin, the lakes didn't all freeze over either.
When I was up in Duluth, drove through possibly my favorite Wisconsin town name, Minong.
Minong?
Yeah, which, do you know what that's the home of?
Probably some big fish or like a big ball of yarn.
Nope. Big ball of yarn. It's in Wisconsin yet. We're not to Minnesota.
Okay.
It's not Paul Bunyan.
It's like the, yeah, ooh, some Paul. I like that. Because it's Northwood, so it could be, right. Yeah. The biggest axe.
Nope.
Big old axe up there.
Jack Link's Jerky.
Oh, yep, okay.
There's a big facility, yes, there. It's the, say,
oh, did you see the Sasquatch?
Did not see the Sasquatch, but we drove through and they have like a fitness recreation center, and it's the Jack Link like recreation center. So it's like Jack Link's owns Minong, I think, for the most part. Because the population was kind of surprising for how small of a town it was, but I think it's all people that must live there and work at that facility that's there. But yeah, up there they really didn't, you know, even getting to Duluth, I really don't think they had much more than we did. Maybe a little bit, but. A
couple farmers, before we got the snow, went snowmobiling, it sounded like they had to go very far up in the UP to hit. But once they did, it was hundreds of inches.
Sure.
So looking by the chart here, we're definitely in full spring.
Your official?
Yeah, we've got two more winters, yeah.
Really? I think we're spring of deception, and we're just going to have one more, but we'll see what the...
So our first winter was the snow that we got before Christmas, right, that all went away.
Right, that was that, like, we got a little snow.
It wasn't really springy, though, because it was very cold after that.
But I'm saying, like, literally on Christmas it got spring, because remember it got warmish, and then, like, the snow melted on the trees and stuff, and it was really
pretty.
Yes,
the hoarfrost.
The ice.
Yes. Yes, that we had that really cool. So that was, kind of your winter and full spring. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, really, in the next 10 days, we're not really getting that big of a drop. Saturday's supposed to be like 29 for a high.
There's a couple days where it drops cold and
popping back.
And then we're right back to the 40s. Yeah. So we'll see. It is only the end of February. We've got all of March and April to go through yet. So, time will tell.
So, bring on the alfalfa questions, right?
Well, we've been getting them already.
Right, fair.
Oh, and wheat.
And wheat, yeah.
Yes.
Even been getting cover crop questions. Like, oh, I don't know how my cover crop germinated. And I'm like, well, yeah, but it's not.
Oh, yeah, like gut feel right now. I still think we're fine. Like, this isn't, this won't hurt it at all.
No.
It'll hurt if we get like way too warm and then cold again, or just.
And even think about last year, we were greening up, right? We were hauling manure right now.
Right.
Right.
We were soil sampling this time last year. So, yes, which was the first time ever in February.
Right.
All right. You guys ready to talk some soybeans?
Ready.
All right. So, Bill, what do you got for us on Plenish soybeans?
Yeah. And I should actually start off by saying it's really not a Plenish talk. I mean, that just is the most popular, right? It's more of a high oleic oil soybean talk. But basically, because Plenish is becoming very popular within the dairy community for its feed benefits, and also obviously then it's trickling down to cash croppers to try to get a premium. So first off, I just wanted to, like, what are we talking about? So normal soybeans have a higher... your conventional regular soybeans have a higher percentage of linoleic and linolenic acids that are polyunsaturated fats, and they are more unstable. And this is kind of in the cooking sense of, like, obviously we use oils, olive, and just different oils to cook with. And from this standpoint, this is kind of where it starts, right, is the stability. So those are a little less stable. So your shelf life, your fryer life is less, whereas high oleic acid is a monounsaturated fat, which improves the oxidation of that, the stability.
Which would actually make it oxidize slower, right, basically?
Right.
Okay.
And olive oil is a very, that's kind of the gold standard of, like, when you're going to cook, you want the best, quote.
Oh, yeah.
You're going at olive, right?
It's not the canola, not the peanut, not even the vegetable.
Nope.
It's the olive.
It's the olive oil. I don't do a good Popeye.
Popeye's girlfriend.
Yep. So, which that has about 75% oleic oil in it. A normal commodity soybean has about 23%, so quite a bit less. in comparison. And when we're talking high oleic soybeans versus our commodity normal soybeans, we're at 70% oleic, and some varieties, depending on the variety, and we'll go into the different varieties and the different companies and how that's all shakes out and potentially where you could look to purchase some if you are. There are some varieties that you can get over 80%. So that's obviously, you know, completely the opposite of what a commodity normal soybean is. So in a cooking sense, this soybean oil would be better if you're running a restaurant or something like that, where it's going to have longer shelf life and also better stability in your fryers, last longer when you're cooking those French fries or chicken fingers or whatever. And actually, we were talking off air before we started about, that's like a year ago, if we roll back the clock, and when this was kind of introduced to a lot of us, was they were kind of pushing that, like, this is going to go into the cooking market, and it really hasn't gone that way, you know, a year later, right? It's more in the feed, the animal feed end of it, where it's locally anyway, is really getting pushed. So it's not like we're not seeing it in Lambeau, or we're not seeing it in all these restaurants yet. For that oil stability.
If this oil could make it so that my cheese curds don't taste like onion rings and or fish when they're fried in the same oil, that would be, I'd be game for paying a little bit more for it. But if it's still going to do that.
Me. Yep. So I got a chart here that you can probably find on the internet somewhere. But right, like I said before, soybeans are at 23. High oleic is at 75 to 80. Canola oil, which I use at home a decent amount over just regular vegetable, that's at 61. And then obviously olive oil at 75. So,
do we in the olive oil, we got your EVOO. That's the big, you remember the extra virgin?
Yep.
So is there extra virgin version of the high oleic? Is there like a
probably that 80%
processed? Get to the, yeah, something that's
or maybe
that
it is
better.
Just the comparative to the commodity bean. It is the extra virgin.
Maybe
true.
So why would we be interested in this as a agriculture industry? So a couple research papers I found, like some benefits of these high oleic soybeans maintain milk yield, which is important when fed to dairy cows. And in some cases, increase milk fat concentration over a control. I don't think this is like a definite, but in a couple of studies I saw, it did increase milk fat. I don't know that you can, like, I'm not a nutritionist, so I'm not going to talk much further on that because not our forte. We're going to get into our forte in a little bit, but I just wanted to give a background. And it also increased total tract fat digestion. So I would think in an animal, the more digestion you get, the better. Also increase back fat depth on certain meat animals. So again, a little more marbling in the meat, and increased body condition and body score. So we're getting better conditioned weight animals. So benefits there of increasing in the milk and increasing in the meat.
So not only does it make the steak look good, it makes the source of the steak look good.
Correct.
All right.
Correct.
Can you tell a steak from just looking at a cow?
I need a butcher.
Do you need a butcher? Just stick your head somewhere? I don't know.
That's still a best light out.
Sorry. Got a soft.
It's got to be your bowl.
It's got to be your bowl. That's
right. It's got to be your bowl.
It's got to be your butcher.
Yes.
Stick your head up a butcher's ass. Get a good look at a T-bone. Wait, no. It's got to be your bowl.
Anyhow, I did reach out to a nutritionist colleague that I work pretty close with on a couple dairies, and just like, what's your thoughts on this? And he got back to me, and I'll just read this quickly. It's he said, when these beans are roasted, the bypass protein is good for the ration. But he said, more importantly, the oleic oil does not depress butter fat. So he was in the camp of like, I'm not so sure it increases it, but we aren't losing anything.
Sure.
So it doesn't depress butter fat in cows, which obviously we're getting paid on, which is very important. And for him, the more important part is it's replacing some of the bypass fat that they're feeding, which apparently, I'm sure some of the dairy farmer listeners out there are going to agree, this bypass fat is very expensive. So
that'd be like your palm oil, right? Your,
yeah, there's.
I'm not a nutritionist, but I just I know that's been brought up in talk about the benefit is they're pulling the palm oil out of the ration, and it's being replaced with what we're getting from the Ohio Lake.
So somebody's throwing something at the radio right now.
Yeah,
like, no, stay it's in not your lane.
Right. I am stay in your lane. I am not a doctor. I just stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
I'm not a nutritionist.
I'm not a nutritionist.
So if we're not increasing anything, by all means, what we're doing is we're reducing cost by just feeding a different soybean. We're not paying really any difference. It's here it is. So that's the important part of where we're getting at this is in our world, we're growing these to feed dairy cows because, you know, well, that's our livelihood, right, is dairy. So
happy cows eat Ohio Lake beans.
That's where we're going to stop on the nutrition part. Now we're going to go to like we're getting back in our lane here.
Bill, okay. Do you guys know any numbers of like how many acres of beans will be needed to feed so many cows? Is there kind of a, not necessarily a rule of thumb, but like a range you've heard?
I've got a grower that's really jumping into this, and it looks to be like 8/10 of an acre per cow is kind of, okay. I don't know if that's like a real number or if that's just his number, but
it's some serious amount of acres.
That's a lot. Yeah.
So that's something to think about too. It's not like, you know, it's not like you're going to need 1/10 of an acre per cow or right. something. This is like for every,
and it's probably just like, that's what we're feeding of regular soybeans, right? Like we're feeding a fair amount of soybean meal anyway. Right. Right. It's just now
and this is going to vary, I'm sure, a lot by how you want to feed them and diet. And as we get into this more, maybe they can use some Ohio Lake and some other, but I'm sure then also that counteracts it. So, right. So the acres that they're talking about are going to be more acres. Why this is important is this is going to be more acres than just what like the Wisconsin-based cows are going to need. We're going to need Illinois high oleic. We're going to need other states to grow high oleic to help the cows in this state.
And I've just in the meetings I've had with dairies and talking with their nutritionists, just in the last month, it seems like it's really gaining traction, even since like November. So I think we're going to see a lot more beans in the field this year. Last year I had like 80 acres on one grower that tried it, and it worked well. They got 55 bushel. Weed control was good. I mean, we're going to talk about that in a minute, but that could be a potential problem at this point. In the future, it might be better, but at this point, we're going back a little bit in technology and that.
Right. Well, and not to jump ahead, but when we started with this, we were looking at we need to fill X amount of bushel for the storage that's there. They were talking, you know, a premium for growing them for specific roasters. And it was really a focus, as we said earlier, on the oil side. Like, this was for oil production to get oil for commercial frying to improve that. And now we've switched to, you know what, this feed has something here. Like, maybe we should be not so worried about the oil side, like selling the oil, and more about what we can feed. And
you can feed it in multiple ways. You can feed the soybean meal that's after. You can, some farms are talking about getting roasters back
roast
on their
the whole
farm
thing and feed it. Yep.
And so this is a very large change potential here in how we feed a dairy cow.
And I guess just some history on how did this become, like, I think the three of us kind of really heard about it, you know, 18, 20 months ago, like, you know, a year ago, November, a year ago, October, really, when kind of Pioneer started, and that's where this...
We never had varieties available to us.
Right, no.
So there's just certain areas that had it.
Around 2010-ish, a specific year wasn't given, but the United Soybean Board gave $20 million to Pioneer and Monsanto. DuPont and Monsanto. Now back, remember 2010, we didn't have, Monsanto was still Monsanto yet, to develop these high oil soybeans and trying to get 80% of the U.S., a maturity group that would fit 80%. Apparently we were in the 20%. fast forward that 2 years-ish, Pioneer developed the Plenish in 13 states, so that's 2012. And then go another 6 years ahead in 2018, it took Monsanto to introduce a bean, and theirs was branded the Vistiv Gold. And I remember that, but I really didn't give much, like, whatever, it's there, who cares. We really didn't talk about it much. At that point, both were GMOs. They used the GMO technology to increase that oleic acid, which also in turn decreased the linoleic and the linolenic acids. At that point, they were GMO. In 2021, University of Missouri, United Soybean Board, and Missouri Soybean Merchandising Council, they created the first non-GMO high oil, and they termed it soyleic. And actually, Bex is marketing.
Yeah, so that's on Bex carries
right now. So, yep. So right now, if you'd go to market or you'd go to your seed dealer, here's what you can find. And here, there might be some other randoms out there, but this is what I could find. Obviously, Pioneer's got the Plenish, and like you said, Todd, we got a 1.9 all the way up to a 2.7. So we're kind of pushing, the limits a little bit for Northeast, Northern. You know, get north of 29. I know there's a lot of acres going up north of 29. So we're pushing that maturity group a little bit more than what they're used to at that 2.1, 2.2, because that's kind of what's there. And those are only Roundup ready at this point today. So, and then, like I just said, Bex has got the soyleic, and there's from a 2.3 to a 3.3. So you really only got one, maybe two in our area that would fit that market if you're willing to go to a 2.6. And then I did find a Speedway brand that's actually...
Speedway or Speedway?
Speedway, the
Speedway,
gas station?
Excuse yes. me. You're right.
So you can go to the gas station.
That would be good.
Get your bag of high-leg beans.
Seedway. It's actually a Growmark brand.
Okay.
And they got some lighter ones, 1.4 and a 1.8, and those are conventional as well. So the Bex and the Seedway are conventional, which... In some degree, we're starting to see a little more conventional corn out there and some of that too. So maybe it's not that such a big a deal. And I'm gonna blow our cool bean segment, but in 2026, Pioneer just announced that they will have an E3. So that we're going to go from just a straight Roundup Ready to an E3.
Yeah, so within 3-ish years from introduction to our area, really... they'll have caught up to current technology on beans.
Yeah. And again, I had some planted last year and it's not E3. We didn't use Liberty, obviously. We didn't use Enlist and we had really good weed control. So I guess getting into herbicide, I think, is what the three of us kind of wanted to...
This is what we want to talk about.
Yeah, talk about and kind of end this conversation is it's soil applied, right? We got a really hammer the soil applied herbicides. And like you said, I think, Todd, we got to hope that we get the weather to support good soil applied herbicide activity. 2024, we had great activity. 2023, yeah, not so much with how dry it was. So obviously in some cases, we're going to have issues. Issues are going to pop up just depending on weather. And we have that in corn. We have that in regular soybeans sometimes, but at this point, the bullets aren't there to come back with a Liberty or an Enlist Liberty concoction or whatever you want to do. So you got to get creative with it. And last year, on the acres that I had, I went early with Sonic at 5 ounces and Parallel at a pint, and then we came back with Parallel, Roundup, and Flexstar. 30 to 45 days later, it was cold, so we kind of extended out a little bit longer, and it worked well. I don't know if I'm such a big fan of the double parallel or the double dual application. Todd, you were kind of considering some other options.
Yeah, on that group 15, I really think there should be a push to try to do one pre and then change it up for post. So whether you do, like, say, a Zidua Pro down, and then maybe if you need a little burn down or something with that sharpen, but you start with the Zidua, then maybe go parallel. What I really do prefer is going like the dual down and then coming back just with the different group 15. So Warrant or Zidua SC, Perpetual, Anthem. Those are kind of some Zidua products. So kind of changing that up a little bit. The other, and Outlook, I guess, would be one. Outlook would be good and bad. The Outlook's very water soluble, so you might lose it a little too quick. But at the same time,
if it's not raining as much.
Right, it might activate. So that second pass of that group 15 is going to be extremely critical, that you can get something that activates when you want it to. And I think Zidua would fit that. Any of those would, but maybe just switching it up is maybe my biggest advice. And going one group 15 down, switch it up for that second, and see where the other thing on those group 15s is, look at the label for how long you can go into the vegetative stages. So the dual labels V3, Outlook, I believe, is V5. So you got sort of two more stages later you can go with the Outlook. That might be very valuable depending on the year. There's also a change, though, of when there's always been a talk when you're doing sort of what we'd call conventional beans in this category in a way, but either conventional or just Roundup beans, in that you spray that first pass, then that second pass is, you know, kind of a calendar. 30 days later, you're spraying because you need to overlap that residual. With how early we're planting soybeans, that may be slightly different.
And I do think that it's imperative that these beans are planted on time or early.
Early, correct. The more I've seen, and like you just talked, depending on where you're at, is you're already probably pushing the maturity group a little bit.
Right.
So I would agree you'd want that out as early as you can, and it seems to be where we've had them in the past, earlier is better, but that's just beans in general too. And getting that, obviously getting that pre-down, because we have to, but that second pass is very important. And then sometimes even considering going a three-pass system where you get the pre and then the right up to where that kind of maturity would be. So say if you're doing dual in the second pass, you go right at V2, V3 soybeans. Hopefully it meets the day mark as well. And then a third pass of a Cobra potential, you know, something that you might have to kind of burn some weeds back, Cobra Select at that point. It could be an interesting – whenever I've sprayed – conventional beans, what do we always say when we spray conventional beans? What do you got to do?
Go fishing for
a week. Yeah, don't look at them.
Yes. And go somewhere.
We've been spraying beans for almost 25 years now, where we don't have to really work. Like 2005 and on, we just sprayed Roundup and they looked awesome, right? We don't remember the 90s and the 80s where we crapped the hell out of the beans because we digged them up. Now we're back to that again. And we just got to be okay with a little bit of injury or reaction to that. I do think the key, if you do get a water hemp break, just like any other herbicide application, is we almost need like half an inch. And I got my fingers up, but you guys can't see. But like, that's really close together. Like, we're not letting, if we're going with Cobra or Flexstar, get them really, really small. Don't let them get even an inch can.
Like, forget the soda can, forget
the
bean can, whatever you want to call. You got to be on top of it.
With Flexstar last year, I saw water hemp that were 3 inches not die and almost create zombie water hemp out of those, because it killed sort of the top couple growing points, but the bottom one or two didn't die, and then it started regrowing from that sort of zombie root. And those were scarier, and they bush out, and some of them didn't get too bad, but those are also hard to kill later, no matter what, even if you did have Enlist or something else to you or Liberty. Right.
Either way, it's not happening.
So Bill's right of, like, that's why this overlap residual, partly why I think the overlap residual is important, is just then you get these little water hemps that are there on the earlier side. So like you have, Bill, when you come back with that flex start early, you're going to clean stuff up better. A couple of considerations as well. We talked about checking the labels for, you know, basically up till that stage when you can spray these. The other thing would be rotational restrictions, and flex start is one that you do have to really, really pay attention to. So there's Can you guys think of any other herbicides that kind of fall into that would be late? Cobra, you should be fine.
Yeah, it's really just the main one, besides the, like, restrictions on plants, you know, like you're talking about the V3,
right, the size
of plant, it, yeah. I think as far as, a, like, too late, so we're not.
So the other reason then you do want to spray Flexstar fairly early post is that to field corn, it's 10 months. So most other herbicides, the highest they go is 9 months, but that one is 10. So if you're spraying that, you know, late June, and then you plant late April corn, you're pushing that label.
Yep.
So that one does have some label things you got to watch, and the bigger one is probably alfalfa. So in a dairy, you know, we're talking, so guys say in Illinois, if they grow this for us, their biggest watchout's going to be corn, but here where we've got alfalfa, and I think it's not common necessarily to plant alfalfa after soybeans, but it can happen, and that's 18 months to alfalfa. So that one's a very big sort of watch out that you got to think about, that if you're going that, you're a year and a half that you got to wait to plant alfalfa. So you're basically
you're growing
that,
corn.
Yeah, that following
you
year
back, yeah,
it's
go
not
back to corn
happen.
Silage and then plant your hay. But I do think, like, what might be more important in this case is, you know, normally I think in general the industry, when we're doing a prion, like the conventional or not the conventional, but the normal beans, we're just doing like a Sonic or, you know, just a one, and we're not doubling up. Like we're doing dual maybe, and we're not doing Sonic. But I think in this case, you're going to have some benefit of adding a couple different pre's together, like doing the Sonic and the parallel together, I think is going to benefit you to get that longer. Maybe it isn't 30 days then. Maybe it's breaking down at 45 instead of 30, because Sonic's normally breaking down at 30 or 35. So that might help your case too, is to add a little bit more up front than you normally would. And not going to lie, it's going to be more expensive just to kill weeds in this type of bean.
Right.
It just is.
Yes. It's going to be more expensive. It's going to be more timely. It's going to need potentially three passes across the field to get it done. So the other consideration that Matt, I'm sure you're thinking about, is cover crops and
cover crops, or even going to wheat.
Yeah, and like Flexstar to, you know, a barley, wheat, small grains is 4 months. So it's,
yeah, I mean, if you're in June, then you're probably pushing that too late.
So,
right.
With that label has always been the question of, like,
is it a default?
Right. Is it a default or not? And it obviously depends on the year. It seems like some of it could be right. But most years in general, you're probably okay, but
you're safer on a cover crop. But if you're looking to go wheat after soybeans, which that's more common.
Yep.
Though with these maturities,
you're pushing it there anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, just something to keep in consideration. So there you go. There's a look at Hyolac beans, Plenish, Soilac, whatever you want.
Like I said, one last thing. Yep, as I told Matt.
he made me the signal, wrap it up, and you know, he's taking it back. Okay, whatever.
I think we're to the point of, like, don't be afraid of these. Like, don't be afraid. You can grow them. You can get good yields.
Just remember, you're going back in herbicide technology, and that's okay. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Can I rephrase your don't be? If you've got good water hemp, good giant rag control, maybe not even good, but you're doing okay on
it. You can manage it.
You can manage around. If you've got fields that have major weed problems,
don't put them there.
Maybe don't put them there. Maybe reconsider or just know you're going to have to really, really lay out a herbicide program for
them. Well, and we see the light at the end of the tunnel. E3s are planned for next year. So, yeah, like you said, put it on your not so weedy ground. Find a field for this year that it's easier to manage, and then within a year or two, you're going to be back to current technology where you have more tools.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, Matt.
Okay. You sure know?
I'm good. Go move on.
Okay, we're good. Okay. So there you go. Hyolac beans, something to think about. Talk to your nutritionist on the feed side if you're a dairyman. If you're cash grain and you live near a dairy, maybe have that discussion with your neighbor. But ultimately, it is doable if you want to grow Plenish beans for whatever reason. And technology is improving, so there's light at the end of that tunnel, too. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. I always love this. Arctic Doomsday. Seed Vault is getting 14,000 new samples. So if you're unfamiliar with the Arctic Doomsday vaults, there are several of them. And it's keeping seed banks, basically, for if there were some sort of disaster that wiped out all the current seeds, there'd be somewhere to go back to and not have to start from scratch. So in particular, we're talking Copenhagen, which is a doomsday vault storing food crop seeds from around the world in a man-made cave. It's on the remote Norwegian Arctic island. And it will be receiving 14,000 new samples. Received them earlier this week. The Svalbard Global Seed Vault, set deep inside a mountain to withstand disasters from nuclear war to global warming, was launched in 2008 as a backup for the world's gene banks to store the genetic code of thousands of plant species. It's protected by permafrost, and the vault has received samples from across the world and played a leading role between 2015 and 2019 in rebuilding seed collections damaged during the war in Syria. Seeds deposited this week represent not just biodiversity, but also knowledge, culture, and resilience of the communities that steward them, according to Executive Director Stefan Schmitz of the Crop Trust. The new contributions include a sample of 15 species from Sudan, consisting of several varieties of sorghum, a plant that is significant both in the country's food security and its cultural heritage. So there is a war between the Rapid Support Forces and the Army, which broke out in April 2023, killed tens of thousands of people, displaced 12 million, and plunged half of Sudan into hunger and several locations into famine. So having that seed bank is going to represent hope for the people of Sudan. The total of 14,022 new species will be deposited at 2:30 Greenwich Mean Time, including seeds of Nordic tree species from Sweden and rice from Thailand as well.
I feel like there should be a James Bond or like
bum-ba-dum-bum,
like some movie that I just feel like there's this burly guy with a gun that just stands in front of this door the time, like like guarding it, and like, you know, Mission Impossible or one of those like movies that should be going to rob
the seed vault.
Yeah.
There'd have to be some like super valuable seed. Like, you got to start with a plot point.
Right.
Why are they breaking in? Are they just that bad of a person? Like, I will wipe out the entire world's seed bank. And then I will destroy all the crops. Well,
just so you know, there is Hyolaic soybeans in the seed vault.
Nice. I would imagine.
So,
yeah.
Matt, that's, you so just really? Got your plot right there. There you go. I mean, we're talking about them.
We will force dairy farmers to not feed Hyolaic beans. All right. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute.
I want to keep going with that, Matt.
What else can we find more, in the vault?
More villainy from the seed vault. All right, since we're talking Hyolaic beans, we thought we'd go a little bit more into detail. So as Bill mentioned earlier, 2010s started with the initial investment, and then through that next decade, they developed a lot of these Hyolaic varieties. But Michigan State University soybean breeder Desheng Wang, PhD, with support from the Michigan soybean community, has worked with over 1,000 Hyolaic breeding lines called Olisoy, and he has 15 lines currently in university variety trials. Estimated 1.6 million acres were planted to Hyolaic beans in the U.S. in 2024, with 2.7 million acres projected by 2027, according to a report prepared by the U.S. Soybean Export Council. Indiana leads the production of Hyolaic beans with several processing facilities in the state. So the feeding of Hyolaic soybeans to livestock has also proven beneficial for improving production in fatty acids in milk and meat, as we mentioned. Feeding whole roasted or ground beans to dairy cows increases milk fat. Replacing commodity soybeans with high oleic beans in broiler and pig feed has also shifted the fatty acid profile in the meat of both animals without harming feed efficiency or meat quality. Feeding high oleic soybean meal is not expected to affect feed characteristics since the oil fraction has already been removed and high oleic meal can be mixed with meal from commodity soybeans with no additional changes in the supply chain. So it's not just dairy. There's other benefits in different animal species as well.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast. It's very easy to do that, and also tell a farmer friend. So that's all we ask you to do. Tell some other farmers about it. Like, hey, did you hear about this? Hey, it's really easy. All you got to do is on your iPhone, you just need to go to Apple Podcasts, or on Android, you need to download an app like Podcast Addict. And there you can also, listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcasts. And you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll get into some Cool Beans That's Corny with current events. So Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week, Pioneer has announced the high oleic soybeans with Enlist E3 technology be coming out soon, part of the Z Series line. They'll have some limited availability this year in 2025 with an expansion in 2026. So the Plenish high oleic Enlist E3 soybeans are part of that Z Series, like I mentioned, the leading genetics and high yield potential while offering opportunities to increase per acre profit potential. The new offering in the Plenish line will offer more robust weed management options for farmers looking to grow those high oleic beans. We continue to see growing interest in Plenish high oleic soybeans as farmers learn about the opportunity and to increase profits through processor paid premiums. According to Roger Thiessen, the marketing manager for Pioneer Specialty Crops, with the availability of Plenish high oleic Enlist E3 soybeans, farmers will have access to even better tools to control weeds using the Enlist Weed Control System, the new standard for weed control in soybeans. So Plenish high oleic varieties will be grown and marketed under identity preserved contract programs. Participating processors or elevators will offer premiums for the soybeans. Three Plenish high oleic Enlist E3 varieties will be available in limited quantities this year for use in the Delmarva Peninsula in central Indiana and southern Dakota. Pioneer plans to offer additional options for Michigan, New York, and Wisconsin in 2026 with widespread availability in 2027. All right. That's corny this week. John Deere is looking to lay off 119 more workers at the Des Moines Works. So they have announced that nearly 120 workers at the Des Moines Works facility in Ankeny will be laid off this spring. The company confirmed Friday that 119 employees were informed of the layoffs, which will occur in three phases, March 28th, April 4th, and April 29th. Facility currently employs around 1,500 workers. Deere attributes the layoffs to declining demand and a weakened farm economy. They're not related to production moves, according to the company, as reported by multiple news sources. As we have repeatedly stated, these layoffs are due to the weakened farm economy and reduction in customer orders for our equipment. U.S. Department of Agriculture has forecasted a 4.8% drop in major row crop cash receipts from 2024, with crop prices down over 30% compared to 2022. The latest round of cuts follows a series of workforce reductions at John Deere facilities across Iowa, where nearly 1,500 positions were eliminated last year. In March of 2024, 150 workers were laid off at the Des Moines Works facility across its operations in the state, including plants in Ottumwa, Waterloo, Davenport, and Dubuque. John Deere has announced 16 rounds of layoffs over the past year. So, unfortunate, but hopefully things will turn around sooner rather than later, and maybe we'll see jobs becoming available again. Now we'll wrap things up with our Field Good Friday. So this week we're talking a Milwaukee teacher being recognized as Wisconsin Ag Teacher of the Year. So Wisconsin's 2024 Agriculture Teacher of the Year is Joshua Gonzalez, a second grade teacher at River Trail School of Agricultural Science. For 19 years, Gonzalez has inspired his students to take an interest in how to grow plants during Wisconsin's harsh winters. As part of his lesson plan, his students plant and grow collard greens. With hydroponic machines, we're able to grow as much food as we want. According to Gonzalez, he said it's out because of the hands-on instruction that he does. Gonzalez was named Wisconsin Agriculture in the Classroom's Outstanding Teacher for 2024. He said he's grateful to be recognized by his peers, but his real joy comes from seeing what his students have learned. So there you go. Growing. Have you guys ever eaten collard greens?
No.
I can't say that I have.
No, I have not.
Not saying I won't eat them. I just don't know that I've ever had them. So there you go. That'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
This week we talked about hyalic beans, whether they're plenish, soilaic, or the seedway variety. There are many out there in different maturities. In our spotlight, we took a look at the Doomsday Seed Vault and some new additions to that. Egg History Minute, we talked about a little of the history of hyalic soybeans. Cool beans this week. Hyalic soybeans will have E3 Enlist technology starting in limited quantities this year, but increasing over the next 2 years. That's corny as John Deere continues to lay off workers in Iowa. And our Field Good Friday was Joshua Gonzalez named Wisconsin Ag Teacher of the Year for 2024. Thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.